Passage is made possible because of support from people like you, the listener. To find out how you can support Passage, visit patreon.com/passagepodcast. There, you'll find information on our reward levels and what you'll receive for supporting Passage. Some of these rewards include episode transcripts, exclusive audio updates, and even exclusive bonus episodes. That's patreon.com/passagepodcast. We can't make Passage without you. Thank you for your support.
Daisy Bonham here. You may remember me from episode 1 of Passage, where I was explaining the story of the mysterious 150-year-old lifeboat that showed up in the middle of Marrow Passage a couple of weeks ago, before I was so rudely interrupted by a woman having a crazy panic attack and accusing me of lying to her. You're probably wondering what in the hell that was all about, and I'm right there with you. After the recorder slipped out of my hand following an errant swipe by the woman during her fit, I unfortunately lost audio. But what happened was this woman slowly calming down enough to explain to me that her name was Lacey. Lacey Gnome. And she had no idea what was going on, which made two of us. Myself and some other passengers helped her inside and kept her calm until we arrived in Port Possession. After a few moments, an ambulance arrived and escorted Mrs. Gnome to the local hospital. That, I suppose, should be that. But like I said last time, I will follow this story wherever it goes. And I don't know, there was something about Ms. Gnome, or perhaps what she said, that I can't shake. My monkey brain knows it has absolutely nothing to do with this investigation, but my reptilian brain refuses to forget it. I want to know who this supposed good man is who lied to Lacey and whether or not he's my doppelganger. But first things first, I had arrived in Port Possession after all, and I wasn't about to waste the opportunity. I exited the ferry and made my way towards town to get a first-hand look at the last place on Earth where the SS Cumberland was seen before it disappeared. After watching the ambulance disappear, I made my way from the ferry dock down Waterfront Street, named for a pretty obvious reason I shouldn't have to explain. It's a straight shot through the town with aging brick buildings on each side. Looking north, Marrow Passage laps the shores just behind the buildings to my right, while the town slopes sharply up a steep hill behind the buildings to my left. This downtown stretch is almost separate from the residential section of Port Possession. You can imagine that back in 1866, this was where dock workers and tourists mingled in the saloons, restaurants, and houses of ill repute. I actually don't know if there were houses of ill repute, or any repute, but I guess I have my own assumptions about what life must have been like back then. These days, there's all of the usual retail trappings of small-town America. A pharmacy that doubles as a hangout spot for the pensioners, or retirees, as you call them. A greasy spoon called the Greasy Spoon, a thrift shop, a pub, a coffee shop, a lot of coffee shops actually, a Mexican joint with dubious bona fides when it comes to authenticity, banks, a Subway sandwich shop, all of them taking up space in buildings meant for another place and time, giving them an air of lived-in credibility that I'm not sure they've earned. All the same, I want to take in these buildings, these businesses, and these people to understand Port Possession as a community better. I figured, what better place to do that than the local pub? The Thirsty Scupper, which, based on my understanding of what a scupper is, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But what does it matter if there's beer? It was midday, so there was plenty of space at the bar. Even so, I decided to sit close to the only other patron on hand, a man doing the crossword puzzle with a half-drunk pint nearby. I don't know if I believe in the magic of the universe or whatever, but if I came here looking for understanding of Port Possession, I got exactly what I wanted.
Excuse me, miss?
Yes?
I couldn't help but notice your recorder.
I hope you don't mind.
Oh, no. No, not at all. Given what's been going on, I put two and two together. You're a reporter, right?
I suppose I am.
And Australian?
No, English.
Oh, sorry. I'm not good with accents.
That's okay. You're not the first.
Well, anyway, I'm Chip Kuznick. I'm the local drip.
Excuse me?
That's to say, I own the local drip coffee shop across the street.
Ah, gotcha.
And I'm also a Port Possessions town historian, so...
So you're a good person to know.
Well, I'm no good at telling the difference between Australian and English accents, but if you want to know anything about the history of our fair town, I'm your man.
Do you know what happened to the Cumberland?
Except that. That's the only thing I don't know.
You and everyone else.
That's right.
Chip Kuznick looks about 40, kind eyes, birthmark just to the left of his nose. He's got hair so black you just know it must be dyed, probably went prematurely grey. I guess when you're a big shot like the town historian, you gotta keep up appearances. I followed Chip back to his coffee shop, where he made me a pretty decent cappuccino and started telling me, well, everything. He talks about Port Possession before it was Port Possession.
It was known as Setsuba by the Skinomish tribe, who considered the land that would become Port Possession as their home. They'd travel all over the peninsula, sometimes for fishing, sometimes to go to war, but they'd always come back here. Skinomish legend said this area was sacred because of the way the two bodies of water met out at the end of town. The strait, bringing in the ocean current, and the passage. They believed the spirits of the water were in a never-ending battle at that point over by the edge of town. I guess that battle's still raging.
He talked about how Port Possession was settled.
So J.W. De Bruin shows up with his timber conglomerate in 1862 and realizes not only is this an untapped territory for logging, but it's also a prime location to establish the port that all trade will move in and out of. So he sets up shop and forms an uneasy treaty with the Skinomish tribe. Now, at this time, they're led by a chief named Shuktok. It's S'Hou-TAK. The terms, as far as we understand them today, were more favorable to De Bruin's interests, to say the least. He gave them some fishing rights, but wanted most of their land. Shuktok didn't appreciate the terms. De Bruin and his men refused to leave, and that's how we got the possession war.
Wait, there was a war?
There were a lot of wars back then. You don't hear too much about them these days because we were almost always the bad guys, and, well, we don't like to see ourselves that way. Anyway, the reason it's considered a war and not, say, a skirmish or a misunderstanding is because a whole slew of local tribes joined the Skinomish in the fight. Raiders from the Haida, warriors from the Puyakit, and fighters from the Klickanaw all fought on one side. Local militias, with a little help from the United States military, on the other side. But to be honest, it was really more of a series of skirmishes than a war. Ah, love that word. Skirmishes.
Great word.
Isn't it? The whole thing lasted about 9 months. There were deaths on both sides, including a young soldier mistakenly killed by what they said was a bullet shot by Shuktok himself. Regardless, the whole thing ended in, November 1863. Shuktok was captured, which ended the conflict, but then he was put on trial for the murder of that soldier.
Wait, it was a war, and the American soldiers were trying to kill them.
Yeah, well, to the victors go the... Well, that's not the right anecdote, but you know what I mean. He was found guilty, of course, despite the fact that no one could actually verify he was the one who shot the man. And he was hanged in February 1864.
He told me about the early days of Port Possession.
They called it the Town of Dreams because they truly believed it was going to be the epicenter of trade and cosmopolitan life in the Pacific Northwest. It went as Port of Possession for a few years, thanks to the war, but it officially became ratified as the Town of Port Possession in early 1864. J.W. De Bruin was the original mayor, of course, and his town council was made up of members of the wealthiest families who settled here. There was, Isaac Blaine, James McLeod and brother Frank McLeod, Arthur Berry, and J.W.'s son, Lee De Bruin. The Blaines, the McLeods, Berrys, and De Bruins. In all the years since, there hasn't been a time where all four of those families weren't represented in the Port Possession government in some way. Not even now, but I digress. In 1865, the elder de Bruin unveiled his grand plan to secure the town's status. He wanted to connect it to the main railroad lines to make it even easier for freighters and tourists to make this their port of call when visiting the Washington Territory. His big problem? The best plots of land to run a railroad track through were all right smack dab in the middle of the Skonomish land the tribe had been given following the Possession War.
Awkward.
To say the least. I mean, it was as much a pipe dream then as it sounds now. It made sense to run rail through Tacoma, Everett, Bellingham, Seattle eventually, but it didn't make sense to build an entire line just to reach Port Possession all the way out on the peninsula, especially with no other reason to go out there. But that didn't stop de Bruin. He was a man with a plan and plenty of connections. Captains of industry were aware of Port Possession. He curried favor with William Pickering, governor of the territory. He felt as though if he could convince the tribe to let them build the rails, it was a done deal.
Something tells me this doesn't end well for at least one party.
Well, at this point, the Skonomish were officially led by a man named Loxamoa, who was the son of Shuktok. But it was also understood that his sister, Shalitza, wielded power as well.
Was that common?
To have a split head of state within a tribe? Not very.
No, I meant to have a woman in such a place of authority.
Again, not very. For tribes or settlers. So de Bruin was said to be pretty buddy-buddy with Loxamoa, who saw a future between the tribe and the townsfolk. Shalitza, meanwhile, was said to be much more like her father. She didn't understand why the tribe needed to keep making concessions to the white people.
I'm with her.
Well, that's all well and good now, but back then, Loxamoa won out. He and de Bruin shook hands, and the railroad was going to come through Port Possession.
But there is no railroad through Port Possession.
That's correct.
What happened?
The Cumberland happened.
They didn't build Washington railroads because a boat went missing.
When the Cumberland went missing, it was a PR nightmare for Port Possession. Not that they had PR back then. All eyes were on this backwoods town that had sent the ship and all of its passengers to their doom. It became bad luck to stop in Port Possession before heading out to sea. Captains would reroute their ships to stop in Seattle, Everett, or Bellingham instead. The governor and all the officials de Bruin had in his pocket suddenly started treating him like a leper. He died 2 years later, and his big city dreams died with him.
But the family is still pretty popular here, from what you said.
Important? Sure. Popular? I guess that depends on who you ask.
Who would say they're popular?
Roger de Bruin, the current mayor. His daughter, city councilperson Marcia Garrison. His brother, city councilperson Tom de Bruin.
And who would say they're not?
Most everyone else.
But if they're so disliked, why did people elect them?
Hey, I am just the historian.
And the coffee shop owner.
Well, historian me knows to stay out of it, but coffee shop owner me thinks the de Bruins and all the current members of the four families that sit on the city council are up to no good.
How so?
Oh, you're going to get me in trouble. All I'll say is this. This is a good town, full of good people. It should stay that way.
Chip and I chatted a little while longer, and then I had to get on my way. The ferries don't run very late between Port Possession and Anthes Island, and they're known to get cancelled due to low tide, so I didn't want to risk staying too long. He gave me his card, as well as a few books on the history of the town and region, and we set up some time for an actual tour of the town in a couple days when I return. As I was walking back to the ferry dock, I noticed a family of deer walking along the edge of the slope that separates the residential section of Port Possession to the downtown strip. There were four of them, all walking in a row, calmly, stopping every so often to snack on an errant shrub or plant. I've since come to learn that the deer and people of Port Possession have a bit of an understanding. It's not uncommon to see them mulling about on your lawn or ambling down the street you live on. The human residents have, for the most part, agreed to let them be, so long as they're not munching on someone's garden. I think I started to understand what Chip was saying. This was the town Port Possession was meant to be, a picturesque seaside village with a one-road downtown and locals living in harmony with nature. Anything bigger or grander would throw the whole balance out of whack. Normally that might be it for this episode, but after I took the ferry back to Anthe's Island and checked into my hotel, motel really, I got a call from Lacey Gnome, the panic attack woman from the morning. In a moment of confusion, I had given the ambulance medic my card with my phone number on it. She had gotten my number from him. She just wanted to thank me for helping and said if there was some way she could repay me, she would love the opportunity. I don't know why, to be honest, but I asked her if I could come by and chat with her. Like I said in the last episode, I follow the story as it comes to me, and if someone lobs me an offer, I'm going to take it. She said, of course. She was still on some pretty good painkillers, so we decided it made sense for me to be the one to operate heavy machinery and visit her at her home in the morning. Tired as hell, I hung up and went right to sleep. I had a brief moment of confusion this morning when I stepped outside. It was the kind of grey, overcast morning that you imagine in your head when you think of the Pacific Northwest, but also think they only existed in movies and TV shows. But this place lived up to its reputation, and then some. Impenetrably gunmetal grey skies that threatened to turn darker, but never seemed to. A misty fog followed me north as I left Anthe's Island across a stunning bridge overlooking Marrow Passage. I left the fog behind once I got to the mainland and weaved my way up towards Lacey Gnome's residence just south of Bellingham, the last Western Washington city of note before you hit the Canadian border. The skies remain the same, but the geography eventually opened up. I found myself on a long stretch of road skimming the edge of Samish Bay, a section of Puget Sound on my left. A rising wall made up of the Chuckanut Mountains lay straight ahead. Not nearly as foreboding or impressive as the Cascades, but I did have an uneasy sense of feeling boxed in on all sides. I had a brief moment of panic where I considered turning back. Instead of following the story where it leads, in that moment, it felt like I actually had no say in the matter. The story was in control of me, if that makes any sense. I don't know if I even understand it. I'm sure my editor won't. The feeling passed, and I soon found the cross street that would lead me to Lacey's home. After a minute or two of driving down a patch of street that could use a serious repaving, I found the manufactured home that looked like it had seen better days. The grass was untidy and probably hadn't been mowed in months. Two cars sat in the driveway, but I'm pretty sure only one of them actually worked. I see her through the front window, and in a brief moment, we make eye contact. She briskly shuffles away to give the home one last tidy, but it seemed to me like she had been standing there a while, waiting for me.
Hi, Daisy. Come on in.
Thank you. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm just peachy. I'm so embarrassed about all that nonsense.
Oh, no, please, don't even worry about it.
Thank you for being there for me.
Not at all. Not at all.
Lacey strikes me as the kind of person who is... sheltered isn't the right word. She's been tucked away. You get the sense she's always lived in the house back in these woods on her own. It's forebodingly lonely. And yet, she always has a smile on her face, always quick to offer you something. Whatever resentments and pain she has, she keeps stowed and out of sight. Perhaps, I thought, she keeps that for him, the man she called out for. She's gaunt and doesn't appear to take good care of herself. Still, she's the kind of woman some might refer to as handsome. Her deep blue eyes are penetrating in a way that makes it feel like she's looking right into you. Before we sat, Lacey made tea, making sure to show me the name on the box, British Blend. I didn't have the heart to tell her there's no such thing. She poured me a cup of British Blend and we sat in her living room, an ornament-choked box with pastel accents and little cherub statues everywhere I looked. She took a seat on her slightly musty couch and I sat in an antique chair that, in better condition, was probably worth more than Lacey realized. After some chit-chat, we started to discuss what exactly happened on the ferry.
So, what brought you down all the way from Bellingham to ride the Skonomish ferry that day?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Seriously?
And heart. Honest to God. I grew up here, lived my whole life here, and hell if I've ever been to Port Possession once in my life. I think I've only gone down to Anthony's Island a handful of times. Mostly secondhand shopping. They have tons of thrift stores. Must be all the old people living there.
So you weren't going to Port Possession that day?
Oh, I was going there all right. But I swear I couldn't really explain why. I woke up that morning, I did my usual routine. A coffee, two eggs, two slices of toast with butter, crossword puzzle. Almost solved the whole thing, but I couldn't get one answer.
Do you remember what it was?
Stubborn stain to be removed. 9 letters, 3rd letter S, last letter E.
Obstinate?
Well, shit. Where were you when I needed you? Anyway, I hopped in the shower to get ready for work.
Work? You were supposed to be at work?
I was. So much so that they considered my unexplained absence a good reason to let me know my services were no longer required at the Chuckanut Cooperative Food Market. I've been there almost a whole year, and just like that, I mean, sure, I was late a few times, and maybe I was a little liberal with the employee discount, but jeez.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Story of my life, sweetheart.
Lacey went on to give me the Cliff Notes version of her life up until now. Born and raised in Whatcom County, Washington. Dad left when she was too young to remember. All the men who tried to replace him were names and faces she wishes she could forget. She has an older brother who got caught up with the wrong crowd, moved to San Francisco 20 years ago. She hasn't heard from him since. She's too scared to Google him. I did later on and couldn't find anything of note. Attended the local college for 2 years but gave it up for the wrong guy. She's bounced from job to job since. Her mum passed away when she was 25, leaving her this home and its mortgage and not much else. She wasn't kidding about the trip to Port Possession being out of character. The furthest she's ever travelled is Seattle, which she refers to as the big city. Doesn't have a passport, so she's never been to Canada, even though it's a 45-minute drive away. So close that for her job, she had to know the exchange rate each day for when Canadian tourists paid with two knees. The $2 coin instead of dead presidents.
So what exactly happened on the ferry? The panic attack?
Oh, Lord. Well, that was just... As soon as I go on board, I feel off. Uncomfortable in my own skin. Uncomfortable being around other people. This one family came along with 5 kids and all that chatter and noise just about tore my skull open. No offense.
No, none.
So I just headed out to the deck part, you know, where you saw me. I spent most of the ride out there. At first I was just trying to sort myself out and take a breath, you know? But then I started getting this really strange, I don't know, sense about something.
Something
bad. Something bad. Like, you know, I've been known to dabble in tarot cards and that kind of stuff, but I'm not one of those airy fairy types. I got 2 feet planted firmly on terra firma and all that. But that feeling on the ferry, it was like I had crossed over into another place or something. It felt different. The temperature changed like that. It got colder, if that's possible. My body tensed up like some kind of natural reaction to a danger I couldn't see yet. Maybe that's what a panic attack feels like? I don't know. This felt like something else, something otherworldly.
Okay.
I think I might have had a vision.
Of a man?
What?
You thought I was a man when I came over to you, so I thought maybe...
What now?
You said, I thought you were a good man. That's what you said to me when you stopped screaming.
I did?
Yeah. I certainly wouldn't forget that.
No, I imagine not. Honestly, I don't remember anything that... I remember seeing you, vaguely. You and the other passengers helping me. I can picture it all. It's like I could picture it on a movie screen. In the distance, that's what it feels like.
Okay.
It's like I can see that happening, but I have no control over it. I said what I said, but I don't remember saying it. I don't remember thinking it.
So what was your vision? You said you had a vision.
Well, it was like I was surrounded by water. Not submerged in it, but I could feel it all around me. It was cold. And there were other people there as well. I feel their anger and their pain. It's suffocating because it just feels like it was all directed at me. It was so loud, but I couldn't tell what was making the noise, like voices maybe. Then, and this was the only distinct part, I felt like someone was pointing a gun at me. I mean, I just felt it. I felt the danger. And that's when my right hand suddenly got ice cold. I looked down at it, and I was holding the gun.
And
that was it, I think. And then you and the others came over. I apparently said what I said, and when that movie screen thing, that faded, and then I felt like I was there with you again, actually speaking, actually in control of myself.
We talked a little while longer, but the truth was, I didn't know what to make of Lacey. It all sounded a little much. A lonely woman takes a ride on a ferry, perhaps purposefully, along the same water where the skeleton boat she's been reading about in the paper was found, or perhaps subconsciously because of it. She has a panic attack. The news story blends with her reality. Here we are. Her vision, perhaps nothing more than a desire to insert herself into the story. It's an urge that anyone who's ever been on Twitter or Facebook during a tragedy knows well. And because I'm a reporter, I validated all of it. I was starting to feel like a bit of a rube myself and drank my British blend a little faster in order to speed up the visit. There was a lull in the conversation. She sighed and said, "Anyway, I don't want to take up any more of your time," and I knew that was my cue. Perhaps had I just shook her hand and been on my way, that would have been that, and I wouldn't have wasted the last 5 minutes of my life listening to this story. But then, as I was leaving, something happened.
Okay, well, if you think of anything else, you have my number and email.
Yes, and again, I'm sorry for rambling and probably wasting your day. I'm sure you've got a million things to do.
Oh, nonsense. It was a pleasure, and I hope you feel better.
Thank you. I'm very excited to listen to the podcast. It's like my 15 minutes or something. Well, that's what they say.
Something like that, yeah. Hopefully there's enough people interested enough to listen.
They will listen.
I hope so.
They will listen if you speak.
Right. I'm sorry, are you...
You must do this for me. You must do this, Roger. If you love me, you will tell him. You will warn him so that he can tell others. It is the only way to stop this. You are a good man, Roger Margerin. Do this for me.
Let go of me.
Oh. What? Oh, my God. What happened?
What the hell is wrong with you, lady?
Daisy... Oh, my... I'm sorry. I don't know what just happened.
After that, I left and didn't look back. I think Lacey came out after me, profusely apologizing, but I was too angry to care. To be honest, I think I was really too terrified to stop. I got in my car and sped off back to Anthe's Island. So, what was all that? All part of the act? I feel like an idiot, like I'm getting duped. Know I'm getting duped and continue to let the duping go on by including it in this podcast. But it's my own fault. I made the ground rules. I have to live by them. Lacey has called numerous times since that meeting yesterday, but I haven't picked up. She certainly seems authentic in her messages. That, or she's a much better actress than I give her credit for. Either way, the whole thing has left me feeling uneasy. Best to focus on the boat that brought us here and the mystery I'm here to solve. In the next episode, that's what we'll do.